Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is our expert among all experts, Blair Horner, Legislative Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Okay, so let's begin. I'll say something and then you just go, okay?
All right. Does that first one count?
How prescient are you? Shelley Silver.
Yeah, well, you know, he's in deep doo-doo. I think it's the legal term. The U.S. Attorney's Office has arrested him as of, I guess, it was Thursday morning. He's now facing serious allegations of corruption.
Yeah. How much do we know about this?
Well, it's still playing out. It's fast moving. We don't really know for sure all of the details. It appears that the U.S. Attorney's Office is alleging that he was getting millions of dollars in kickbacks for, you know, doing no work for clients, and that they were getting something in return from the government.
And one thing we know, I mean, the WAGs have said for years, we'll never see tort reform in New York State because the major firm that Shelley Silver is working for practices in that area.
Yeah, while I understand the argument, and maybe valid, the Assembly's had that position for decades, even prior to Shelley becoming Speaker.
Because there are a lot of lawyers in the Assembly.
We recently did an analysis, and it's about 25% of the Assembly who say they have, 25% of the Assembly members who do law work outside of being legislators. So it's not an overwhelming anymore.
Well, yeah, but 25% is a lot of people.
Yeah, well, most of them, actually about half have no outside jobs to speak of. Yeah. I don't mean to argue that people aren't right. I'm just saying that you put it in some context. There's a historical position the Assembly Democrats have had, and it predates Silver by many years.
Now, Blair Horner, there's a spate of articles now about how Andrew Cuomo wants to set up a commission that would set the rules for pay raises. And it's pretty interesting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very good argument to be made that lawmakers' pay should not be basically as a result of a deal with the governor, that it should be based on something other than the political equivalent of extortion, right? Because the last time they got a pay raise, then Governor Pataki demanded the creation of charter schools. Now, people may think that's a good policy proposal, but some people don't. And is that really the way the pay raises should be doled out? What the legislature and the governor agreed to a couple years ago is to create a commission to look at judicial salaries. The governor is proposing something similar for the legislature and the executive branch. And, you know, philosophically, I don't think we would have a problem with that. The question is, who are the people that are going to be on the commission? The Judicial Commission has names like Bill Mulroe on it, for example, and Billy Thompson, both of whom are longtime Democratic activists. One now works for the governor. If they're going to have a commission, it must be independent as Albany can get, certainly, if not more than that. Otherwise, it'll just be a fraudulent way of just jacking up people's salaries.
Well, except that the way that I'm looking at this, Cuomo has sort of set preconditions on who could have a raise, what the commission would be looking at, like people should get a raise if they don't have outside income.
Well, they would get bigger raises. I think, if they don't have outside income.
Sounds to me like Cuomo is throwing a bomb into the middle of the Democratic conference. Because when you do that, basically you're telling the have-nots, you have reason to get rid of people who, like Shelley Silver, who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars on the outside.
It's not millions, as it turns out. I mean, you're right that the governor's proposal, which, so the listeners understand, he creates a two-tier system that the commission would consider. One would be for bigger salaries for those who don't have outside jobs, and then one for a lower salary for those who do have outside jobs. And there would be restrictions on how much outside income you could have. That, by and large, as I mentioned before, roughly half of state lawmakers don't have outside jobs. They tend to be the backbenchers. The leaders tend to have outside jobs, And they tend to be, as far as you can tell, pretty lucrative, as we mentioned before, the Speaker, but it's also true of the Senate Majority Leader. He has an outside law practice, and he makes hundreds of thousands of dollars on the outside. So, and it's all legal, as far as we know, except the U.S. Attorney Office now saying that some of the money that Silver made is not. But, I mean, generally speaking, so you could end up a situation where the governor's created a wedge between the many backbenchers and the few leadership who would not necessarily want this proposal. To me, it seems unnecessarily Rube Goldberg-like. Why not just do what the Congress does, which basically says you're full-time, there are limits on how much outside income you could have, and if you want to do and in certain areas you can't do anything, you can't practice law, for example. And if you want to do something, you have to go to a board and get it approved in advance, which is similar to what the executive branch has to live with in New York right now.
Indeed. Blair Horner, one of the things that's so intriguing here is that if, in fact, Shelley Silver either removes himself or his conference votes him out at some point, he's just been re-upped by
right,
his
for conference. 2-year term.
Right. But there is does not seem to be an heir apparent on the scene.
No, I mean, you know, the last time something like this happened, which was in 1991, then Speaker of the Assembly Mel Miller was convicted. It was after he was indicted. He was ultimately convicted of ripping off clients in his law firm. It was later overturned. He then was forced to leave office because you can't be a legislator and be convicted of a felony. And now, in that time, there was this sort of interregnum where people were sort of figuring out what they wanted to do, and they came up with the popular seeming caretaker speaker named Saul Weprin, who was speaker for 3 years and before he became ill, and Speaker Silver became the speaker. It depends what happens next. If something happens where Silver chooses to resign or the conference revolts or the assembly revolts and kicks him out, then there really is no heir apparent right now, no obvious person other than a clear caretaker-type person. The chair of the Assembly Ways and Means Committee is
Danny Farrell.
In
his 80s.
And he's an older guy. He's been there a long time. Clearly would be an interim position. People would view it that way. The chair of the Assembly Codes Committee is a guy named Joe Lentol. He's been there for many years as well, as things sort out. If the speaker hangs in there and the Assembly Democrats support him, and there's some period of time, and then ultimately he's convicted, by then I think people would sort of figure out who the heir apparent would be. And, you know, who knows? He may ultimately be vindicated because in America you're innocent until proven guilty.
As we know from the Joe Bruno case.
That's exactly right.
Which lasted for years.
And as I mentioned before, Mel Miller was convicted, lost being a legislator, and ultimately that conviction was overturned.
And they didn't say, come on back, Mel. No,
well, he chose not to. He's actually made a lot of money becoming a lobbyist.
Now, Prevarara is the interesting guy here because the rumors are flying fast and heavy around here. The way that the WAGs are working is Prevarara was basically appointed to his position by none other than Chuck Schumer, the senior Democratic senator who gets basically to name of the same party, the president, who gets to name the U.S. attorney. So some people are thinking that Chuck may be behind this.
And just to add fuel to that particular fire, Bharara was his counsel, was Schumer's counsel
Absolutely.
Before he became U.S. attorney.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe, though, that a leading Democrat in the state would be looking to stick a knife into the Speaker of the Assembly's back. I don't know what's going on here. I mean, some of this appears to have emerged from when Governor Cuomo unceremoniously closed down the Moreland Commission, which was investigating public corruption as part of a budget deal last year. Bharara seemed actually to be outraged by that, seized the files.
Outraged by Cuomo's.
Right. That's right. By Cuomo's sort of, you know.
His own commission.
Yeah. After saying it was going to be this independent, you know, that was going to follow the investigations, he closes it unceremoniously, closes it down. And it appears, although we don't know, that the allegations against Silver may have, in fact, initially been found by the Moreland Commission's investigators. And so, I mean, I think you never know, right? I mean, we won't know until Bharara starts talking to the public about what he's been finding. But it's hard to believe that this is a hit job from the senior Democratic senator of the state of New York against the speaker. But you never know, right? I would think, to me, it feels more like Barrar is doing his job as U.S. attorney, following the evidence where it leads him. That's what it feels like.
By the way, I agree with that. But there's another scenario that is being painted around, which is that Cuomo donated silver. And the reason for that one is, you know, that, for example, Cuomo has this huge education,
that's right,
quote, reform. I don't think it's much of a reform, but quote, reform. Silver stands in the way because the Democrats have been very close to the in this assembly, because the Democrats are close to the teachers union. So now the idea would be get rid of Silver, put your own man in. And the own man who we're hearing, whose name we're hearing, is Keith Wright, the assemblyman, and who's very close to Cuomo, who's the head of the Democratic State Committee, for example. And then you have clear sailing.
Well, I mean, if true that the governor did it in a sort of an odd way, right? He closes down his Moreland Commission under the theory that the U.S. Attorney's Office would seize the records.
And that he wouldn't have to do the dirty work.
Yeah,
and get blamed
that's a very complicated scenario. I can't believe that the governor actually, I think the governor just closed down the Moreland Commission because he had a deal. Now, I'm sure he doesn't, I assume.
You mean a deal with the legislature.
Yeah, and I think that it's true that he was looking to roll the assembly on his package of education, so-called reforms. I'm not involved in those issues, so I don't really know. But it's sort of a clumsy way to do it, right? Because the governor got beat up pretty bad in the press for closing down the Moreland Commission, and he got beat up by Barrara for closing down. So it's sort of a clumsy way to do it. But you know, I mean, he's a very clever governor.
Some would even say Machiavellian. I've said it, and
that's right.
Live to regret it.
Well, I mean, you know, Machiavelli's book, The Prince, is actually, you know, sort of a Bible for many elected officials in terms of how you govern in the most efficient way. Let's put it that way.
Blair, this is such big news that I want to stay on it for a moment. So Preet Bharara arrests Shelley Silver. And now here's this guy who was at the head of the iron law of oligarchy. He's the head guy. We had a lot of people running around, but really power came back to him and decision making. Is this likely to be such a bomb that people start to talk, that one thing leads to another and that the whole thing unravels?
Well, we have to be a little careful about prejudging Silver.
Yeah, if this happens.
And so... So with that, now obviously, if he's innocent, then it doesn't go anywhere other than he is unfairly has his reputation unfairly tarnished. If he gets convicted, then he would deserve to be horsewhipped, in my opinion. He certainly knows all of how Albany operates, and has been at the center of many of the important legislative deals that have occurred over the many years that he's been speaker. He's been speaker for 20 years.
One of the three men in the room.
That's right. Under the last four governors. And let me do the quick math. One, two, three. I guess four, or who knows, six Senate majority leaders. So he would certainly know a lot about how Albany operates. And, you know, Albany sometimes operates in the shadows, and God knows what happens in the shadows. But again, that's prejudging what happens to him, and so I wouldn't want to get too far ahead on that, because, as I mentioned before, you know, people are innocent until proven otherwise.
You and your group, NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group, are in business to reform government.
Right.
That's why you're here. I mean, it's one of the major reasons you're here. Right. What does this mean to you as a reformer?
Yeah, I mean, to me, who knows what happens with Silver, right? But the one thing, it just reinforces something that drives me crazy about Albany. We spend as taxpayers, we pay the government, and this government spends millions of dollars on these ethics watchdogs in Albany, the state ethics watchdogs. And we never hear a peep out of those guys. The only person that seems to do anything is the U.S. attorney, which is a federal agency. So to me, it underscores the need for true independent ethics watchdogs at the state level. We shouldn't have to rely on the federal government to come in and clean up the state capitol.
So why are these guys who are in on the game likely to meet your objectives?
They haven't. But
for good reason. They don't want to.
If the place blows up, that may force their hand. And I mean, it's important, I think, for the public to sort of focus on this. Whatever laws come out of this, whatever happens, there'll be more pressure for ethics reform. The governor had his ethics reform proposal tied to this commission this year. There's going to be another debate on ethics. Whatever comes out of it, unless you have effective oversight, it doesn't matter. Though you can have the best laws in the world, and if they never get enforced, who cares? And what we have right now are fatally flawed ethics agencies. They're designed to fail. Even if you had the best people in the world there.
Yeah, but it was the governor who was designing them.
Yeah, it was a lousy deal. And that, to me, seems like...
Well, he's not stupid. He knew he was making a lousy deal, and he did it. Is he trying to fool people?
I guess the short answer would be yes. But when the governor's trying to... You know, the governor does deals on triage, right? So the issues that he cares the most about, he fights the hardest for. I don't think that he was really as vested in coming up with an independent ethics agency. He wanted one, and he was willing to agree to it where the legislature and the governor controlled it.
Let's talk a little bit about the governor's education reform program. Are you happy with that?
Well, we don't work on K-12, so I'm not in the middle of that fight. The package the governor's advancing combines boosting the teacher evaluation system that the state has, changing it and strengthening it in his point of view, combined with an increase in charter schools. And I assume that that there will be additional funding if the legislature basically agrees to those reforms and others. And other packages, he wants to be able to remove teachers more easily who are deemed to be incompetent, however they get evaluated. And the unions are going to fight that tooth and nail. And this is where you mentioned before about the speaker's role. I'm not in a position to evaluate whether or not those are good or bad proposals. Those are proposals that change things. Whether or not they change it enough, who knows, right? I mean, if you have now, you increase the cap, I think, to 100 charter schools, and there are millions and millions of students, I mean, you know, the real focus has to be on the public schools, the traditional public schools, because that's where most kids go.
Yeah, except it seems to me to be so unfair to some of our teachers, our best teachers, go into areas which are thankless,
right.
Where kids, you know, they come from homes that, you know, you don't get read to put it mildly, where there may be one parent who is working all the time. And so these teachers go in, and now it seems to me the governor wants to pick on them. In other words, he wants to hold them responsible in terms of getting a pay raise, in terms of getting tenure.
Right.
Whereas if you're teaching in Scarsdale, easy service.
No, I mean, you know, that's a legitimate point. And that's where this whole teacher evaluation issue sort of has to be done right, if it's even possible. I mean, when right now the state in the health area puts out information on cardiac surgeons' mortality rates.
Sure.
And they go through this very complicated, I think 20-some-odd variable way of adjusting for risk, because you don't want the cardiac surgeon who deals with the diabetes patient, the overweight smoker diabetes patient who has a heart attack, being compared to the long-distance runner, you know, nuts and granola cardiac patient, right? It's the same sort of issue. And so the way they deal with that is they come up with this complicated formula. It can't. The governor's focus, as far as I could tell, was to say the evaluation, half of it would be based on these standardized tests that the state administers. And, you know, I think there's a legitimate debate as to whether or not those are fair evaluations. And so I think that debate has to happen. So if you're going to do a system of evaluation, you have to come up with a fair one. Otherwise, you shouldn't do it.
Blair, there's some talk that Preparara may be a candidate for governor the next time out. You think that's in the wind?
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, I hear the same thing. I mean, there's a guy named Giuliani who rode the U.S. Attorney's Office to becoming mayor and presidential candidate. I have no idea what Preparara said, just so your listeners know, he's said that it's not the case.
We're going to have a higher minimum wage in New York?
I think it looks like it. It certainly looks like it. I mean, you know, there's one that's being phased in now. And in a way, you know, if the governor and the legislature come up with some sort of agreement, it would seem to me that one way you could do a minimum wage would be to keep phasing it in at maybe a slightly higher level.
Mm-hmm. The state of the state message was combined this year, maybe because of the death of Mario Cuomo and pressure, with the budget address.
Right.
The governor got some moans, particularly from people like me, when he went on in the beginning and said, this is going to be a 3.5 hour because we're combining them. It's going to be three and a half hours.
Right.
Well, it turned out not to be anything like that. But is this a good idea to combine these two, the budget and the state of the state?
Well, you know, I'm not one for giving elected officials free airtime without being facing questions from the public through the media. And typically what happens in the state of the state is as of typically the first Wednesday in January. The budget is typically the third week in January. It's basically the same speech twice. And so I think that, now again, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, who listens to these things other than the people that are sitting in the room and to some extent the media and to some extent the public, but nobody really pays that close attention. And it's really a way for the governor to sort of shape the legislative agenda going into the session. And so, you know, I don't think it mattered this. I don't think it's going to matter this year that two were combined into one, or if two of them had been done, I don't think it would have made any difference. Ultimately, the rubber hits the road with the budget, and the governor has all the leverage in the world, depending on how he designs the budget, on what it is that he wants. And he has got all sorts of things in there. It is the good, the bad, and the ugly. For example, it appears, I mean, still digging through this stuff, that the governor is proposing a big cuts to the state's public health programs, Alzheimer's programs, et cetera. And, I mean, I got to look at it more carefully, but there are winners and losers in this budget. It's not just winners.
Sure. Okay. Now, we only have a couple of minutes, but I want to ask you real quickly. New York becomes the beneficiary of a huge, unexpected windfall, billions of dollars. How do we spend it? There are those, and I'm one of them, who thinks you spend it, since it's only going to come once, on infrastructure repair. And Cuomo seems to have come up with a thing where, while the money is going partially to build the Tappan Zee Bridge, he's also talking about defraying tolls on the thruway, because they're going to have to go up. That seems to me to be a really bad idea.
Well, I mean, again, the devil will be in the details on that. I mean, I'll give you an example. If the tolls were going to have to go up to pay for repairs to the roads and bridges, and the governor's going to use the money from the windfall to fix the roads and bridges, then you wouldn't need to have a toll hike, right? So that could be the sort of
but
the logic.
But he said for the first year.
Yeah.
What happens in year two?
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the roads and bridges don't get fixed in 1 year. And you're also right that $5 billion comes in a windfall. I mean, good best practices in terms of sort of fiscal management would be that if you get a windfall, you use it on projects that have a beginning and an end, that don't last, where you're not exposed forever, and where theoretically you can make some money off the use of it. So, for example, you fix roads and bridges, society is more efficient, people like to, live in states that are well-run, you can make a pretty good argument that that's a good investment. So I agree that the money being used in infrastructure makes sense. But there's a lot of infrastructure needs. Clean water programs, for example, and water infrastructure, roads and bridges, the state's
highways, potholes.
Yeah, the subway system in New York City is looking at $15 billion budget hole for their capital plan coming up. So there's billions and billions. $5 billion doesn't get you there, but it certainly helps.
Blair Horner, love to talk to you. Legislative Director for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Blair, as always, you know more about this stuff than anybody I know, and we thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. We'll be right back.